session number 27730, reel 8.
Mr. Poblam, reel 8. Now, we were talking about this incident. You were going out to the Corvette.
Yes. We got down to the beach and the naval sergeant or whatever said, you're the chappie that's got to take these ropes out to the Corvette. I said, I thought you said we had to go to the Corvette. He said, well, you treat yourself. So we went over to the Corvette, met the captain, and he looked down over the side of his ship and he said, what do I call you, captain, skipper? Oh, I said, no, just call me a driver. So he said, well, what I want you to do is to take this hawser, put this hawser in your ship, of the well of your craft, and take it and run it out right across to where that LCT is stuck. I said, yes. So they lowered the hawser down into the well of our duck, and the duck was slowly going down into the water. I thought, this is heavy. And anyway, we piled it out over the side of our the stern of our duck, round by the winch. And they said, well, do you want to hook it onto your winch? I said, no, our winch is not long enough for that. So they said, right, well, off you go. So off we went. The naval chappies were paying this hawser out. And of course the weight of the hawser was going straight down to the seabed. Didn't know what depth we were at. But they started paying it out. And slowly my duck was going along like a speedboat. And I said, whoa, we've got to stop here. And the naval fella said, well, what's wrong? I said, well, we're only halfway from your ship to that craft. We won't make it. Your hawser will sink us. It's too heavy for us. I said, we'd have to wind it back in again. Which said we went into reverse, and they hauled it back up from the sea, back to the, we got back to the Corvette, and the skipper said, what's wrong? I said, your hawser's too heavy for us, your sinkers. Ah, well, what do you suggest? I said, well, you take that hawser back up on your ship, and let us have a heavy rope hawser. And I said, what we'd do is that we'd take a light rope with us, and when we get to the halfway mark between your ship and the shore, you start paying out the rope. The rope would float where the hawser didn't. So he said, oh, jolly good idea, you ought to be in the Navy, you know. Blah blah blah. I said, oh yes, I'm bad enough being in the army. So anyway, we did that. We got to the craft, we went up the beach, put our wheels in, went up the beach, and passed them it was a heaving line we had attached to us. We threw the heaving line across to them, they put it on their winch, and they winched the heaving line in and the rope, and then the rope was attached to the hawser, and they got the hawser to the craft, their craft, and then they put it to their shackles and ready for the high tide to come in that night. And then the Corvette was going to put their winching gear in and slowly pull this craft off the beach. In the meantime, the Navy had managed to find some diggers, and they dug a channel out so that when the tide came in, the tide would come into this channel, and this was the theory, the this craft would drop into this channel, and then they would be able to float it off, and which we didn't wait around to see this happen. But that's what we did. That was one of the exercises we did down in Emsworth, because I suppose we were down there for 2 months.
This is a seal cut. This is before D-Day.
Yes.
Now, we've got to go back, just briefly, back to Fort Rose.
Yes.
Because there's quite a big story that we've just missed out with as restarting the interview about Banff.
Yes.
Tell us that whole story about what happened.
Whilst at Fort Rose, we had instructions to go and do some night exercises at a place called Banff, which was just the other side of Narn, northeast of Scotland. And all the ducks moved out, all the platoons moved out on that night exercise. And there was three platoons of 30 each of ducks, so that was 90 ducks was on the road that night. And we went up to Narn, and then on to Banff, where there was a lot of activity going on with the they did have lights up there. And anyway, it came my turn to go out to the sea and get a load of stores off a ship. It was a Dutch ship, and it was what I term as a bucket ship. It didn't have a point on it. It was more round than anything. But anyway, also around this ship was a iron bars, like steel iron bars that went all the way around the ship. And of course, when we got out to sea off Banff, the sea had got up pretty rough, and we had our canvas hoods on, and we had our surfboards out, and we went out into the sea, and each ship had a light on, hanging down, so you knew where you had to go. And then we come alongside the ship, and one of the other drivers called out to me, "Hey, Robert, watch that iron bar on that ship. We've nearly tipped us into the sea, that did. So if you're going to tie up alongside, make sure your rope is slack so you don't get pulled under as the waves go up and down." Anyway, we came into the ship, alongside the ship. We tied up alongside, loosely, as we'd been told. And strangely enough, there was a surge of water which sucked us down. And as we came up, the side of our duck got trapped under this steel bar, and it was slowly tipping us over. Well, of course, Alwyn was in a panic, I was in a double panic, neither of us could swim, well, very, very little, and fortunately the sea went down again. And it took us down away from this steel rod round the ship. And we got our boat hook and we pushed like billy-o to get the duck away from the side of this ship. And we undid the ropes, which was tying us to the ship, and came away without anything. And the people on the ship were all laughing, thought it was a great joke. see this duck getting swamped. And they said, you're coming back for your goods? And I shouted up, no, you can keep your goods. So we came back onto the shore, and I think the Sergeant Major was there, and he said, where's your stores, driver? He said, I said, have you had any complaints about that Dutch ship out there? They said, yeah, they're getting sucked under. Make a report out to me what's gone wrong. So I told them exactly what I've just said. And he said, that's no good. We'll cut that ship out because that's a danger to our fleet. So he said, well, you can go back to Fort Rose. You've done your exercise for the night. Jolly good. And I got moving along back to Fort Rose, and we then got their heads down because we knew we would be going somewhere special the next day. And that was, we did one or two tidying up of the duck and filling it up with petrol and making sure everything was working right. And I think it was 2 days after that we were on the road going down to the south of England,
which is where we pick up again. Now, you've gone to Emsworth, and this is you were there about 2 months in Emsworth camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Before D-Day.
Before
anything
D-Day.
Else happened while you were there?
At the back of the camp, there was the trains, the Southern Line Railway, which went from Portsmouth back to Waterloo. Well, we were what they termed a sealed camp. You couldn't get a pass to go home, which I would like to have gone home. And anyway, one or two of them daredevils said, the London train stops at the halt sign at Rowland Castle. How about getting a pass ticket? And instead of going down into Emsworth or into Havant, which was quite near, we jumped the train. Well, we're always ready for a good laugh. And I thought, well, they can't take any more stripes off me. That's it. I don't want this to go.
There's no point telling me if it's not going on.
Have I told you where I got stripped to the ranks?
Well, you've told several times you've lost, you've been up and down in rank. I don't know which one you mean.
The one where, I'm sure it was at Emsworth where I got stripped to the ranks because they were pretty annoyed. The officers were annoyed.
What about this breaking out of camp?
No, that was after, because I was then the driver then.
Well, finish the story about going into London then.
Right, well, there was about six of us. We all managed to get passes to go into Havant. And we knew there was a train coming in from Portsmouth, which would be stopping at the halt sign, and which was going to Waterloo. So we managed to get through past the guards at the back of the camp, run down a lane, which of course we were pretty fit in those days. Run down the lane to the halt sign, got a platform ticket, and then when the train came in for London, we got on the train, and apparently the guard had already been round before the halt sign, checking tickets, so we were safe there. And we went straight into Waterloo. Wandered along the platform. somebody had got some tickets, platform tickets from Waterloo, brought them back down to us six, given to us, and we just walked up through the gates, showed them the platform tickets, and went into London for the night, for the evening. And then we caught the last train out of Waterloo, got some platform tickets again, walked onto the platform, got on to the Portsmouth train, and I think one had an actual ticket, and he was at the other end of the, this was a marvellous bit of, well, would you call it fiddling? It'd be a wrong word, wouldn't it, in a book. Anyway, we passed this ticket around so that by the time the guard had finished with it, all we had was just a ticket with a lot of holes in. Anyway, we got to the halt sign, it stopped there, we got off there, and we got our halt platform tickets out, handed them in, and then got back through the security, back into the camp, and then into our tents. And that was one of the kind of things that we got up to.
Now, how did you lose your stripes before that?
Well, we were coming down from, this was coming from Fort Rose. We diverted and went through Dumfries. And we stopped the night at Dumfries, which was, I don't know why we went that way. Anyway, we came back down through Carlisle afterwards, but I was a Lance Corporal there. And I was on fire picket for the ducks. And one of the fellas came up to me, he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm on fire picket duty at about 9 o'clock for a couple of hours." "Why?" He said, "Well, I thought we weren't going to walk around the town." The name of the fella was Ernie Curtis. I shall remember him to the very end. And he's a bit of a lad. And I said, "Oh, okay. We'll go for a walk along." There was a big river there. And we walked along the river. And we on the ducks, we were always short of rope for tying our fenders on. When you were come alongside a ship, you wore the fenders out. The time part of the fenders used to get worn. And we were always short of rope. And we're walking along the towpath, and he said, "Look at this here. Look at all this rope on this boy." I said, "You leave it alone, Ernie." I said, "That belongs to that life boy, and that life boy is used for that weir over there." So he said, "Well," he said, "they won't miss a bit of it." I said, "Leave it alone, don't cut it." Anyway, some girls happened to be coming by, and we got started chatting them up. And I said to Ernie, I said, "Well, look, I've got to go back because I'm on duty." And I said, "Don't do anything stupid. Be back at the lines on your pastime." Well, anyway, he did get back, and but it was pretty late. And he said, "I've got some rope for you." I said, "Where did you get it from?" He said, "Never mind about where I got it from. I've got some rope for you." So he said, "I'm putting it down in your well." I said, "Okay."
That's the well on the duck.
Yes, between the back of the drivers to where your containers come. There was a strip. I can show it to you.
It's okay, they can't see them on the turn. That makes it clear, yeah.
And said, "Put it down there. I'm not going to get out." I said, "I'm I've got to get out eventually with the see that the fellas are all right on the fire picker. So I said, you get off to bed and get some sleeping because we've got a long journey tomorrow. So he said, right, okay. Off he went, left me the rope. I checked my fire picket, changed the fire pickets over for the next 2 hour shift. Woke up the corporal that was going to do the next shift. And I went back to bed. About 3 o'clock in the morning, bang, bang, bang on the side of my duck. You're waking there? I said, yes, you woke me. Why, what's that? He said, Lieutenant, can't think of his name, a Lieutenant officer. I said, you're in trouble, Corporal. I said, he asked me who it was. I said, Corporal Nunn. He said, you're in trouble, Corporal. Some rope's been stolen off the weir. And we understand that you were seen by the weir, by the life boy, and also somebody's been and put your name and Curtis's name on the box. So I said, yes, I was by the weir earlier on the evening, and I was with Curtis, but I warned him that I didn't want him to touch that rope because I knew it was for the weir. He said, well, I've got a police constable with me here and they want to take you in. I won't allow that, but I'm putting you under close open arrest until we get to where we're going, because it was a bit of a secret where we were going. And when you get there, you'll be under close arrest. What duck is Curtis in? I should put him under close arrest. So I said, right. This police officer wants to take you to the police station, but I can't allow that because they'll keep you there and you're an experienced driver. You've got to drive this duck down to where we're going. So that's what happened. We get to Emsworth and I'm put under close arrest. Everywhere I went, I had an NCO with me. If I went to the toilet, I had an NCO with me. You name it, I had him. And all the NCOs were saying, you stupid so-and-so, what do you let go out with Curtis? He's known to do these kind of things. He's got a death wish on him. So I didn't know he had one of them. He said, he don't like Armstrong and he'd do anything to upset him. I said, well, he's certainly going to upset me. Anyway, I was called up for company orders and best bib and tucker and plenty of polish, and got to the guard room and in the orderly room, and I said, right, line up. Prisoner and escort, right turn, quick march, right wheel, halt, left turn, hat off. I thought to myself, this is serious. Hat off. It was all nicely polished and whitened, pressed creases in my trousers. I thought I might get away with this. I'd never been before Armstrong before, but I'd heard quite a lot about him. What a horrible little man he was. I knew him from when we had him on our duck.
You mentioned him, yeah.
He was a horrible little man. And there was all the officers there. And he said, the charge is stealing civilian property at the Weir at Dumfries, Scotland. Driver Curtis was with you, and he also charged the same offence, but we will deal with him later. You as an NCO should have known better. He rattled on and rattled on, and he said, I've got your records in front of me. You joined the Territorials 37. You've got a very good record, and yet you can let this spoil it. You were employed by your father, and you went through all the rigmarole. What happened, how I joined the army, what a good family I come from. And he went on, and the other officers were getting bored with having all this lot poured down to me. And he said, there you come and spoil it. So he said, I'm going to spoil you. You've got three choices. You can either take your punishment from the CO of the group, you can either go for a court-martial, or you can take your punishment from me. And I thought, well, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. So I thought, well, he can only strip me, but I don't think he'd do that. He's short of NCOs. Such a lot of members, men, saying, well, I don't want to be an NCO. I don't want to be an NCO to him. And I thought, now I wonder. So I said, I'll take your punishment. Right, Sergeant Major, have you got your razor? I thought, God, what's he going to do? He said, right, he said, take them stripes off him. And they just snick the top of both stripes. And they said, you are reduced to the rank of driver, and as far as I'm concerned, Driver Lunn, I was already gone there, you'll never get another stripe in this company whilst I'm in charge. And he said, that is your punishment. You should have put that man on open arrest as soon as it happened, and I would have let you kept your stripes. Not wait for the officer to put him under arrest. You should put him under arrest. That is the mistake you made. So, Sergeant Major and your escort, take Driver Lunn out. So we marched out, put my hat out back on again. George Ross, the Sergeant Major, he said, well, I'm sorry to lose you, because I understood that you were down for a second stripe. And he said, I know that's what you were aiming for, but he said, anyway, we'll see what happens when we get abroad.
And so that was how you lost your stripe?
That's how I lost my stripe.